Hey, All Sides listeners, I'm Steve Brown, the co-host of WOSU's new political podcast, Snollygoster. Every week, we'll talk to newsmakers, reporters, and lots of other smart people to get the latest on politics from around Columbus and the rest of the state. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Alleged gas attack in Syria, new sanctions on senior Russian politicians, companies and business leaders, potential fallout from planned tariffs, cabinet shuffles, cabinet kerfuffles. Now the top ethics official in the federal government has stepped into the fray over EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt's questionable spending practices. So there's basically nothing to talk about today. Joining me to talk about it anyway is host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, Ken Rudin. Welcome back, Ken.
We didn't mention Michael Cohen. There's a lot to talk about him.
Well, that was at the top of my list. The president is outraged over the FBI raid of Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen. The president called it an attack on our country. What's the significance, first of all, of the fact that the raid was conducted by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan, and it was based on a referral from the chief counsel, Robert Mueller?
Well, I think it's major. I mean, given the fact that Michael Cohen has been with Donald Trump for 10 years, given the fact that, I mean, I don't know how important this Stormy Daniels kerfuffle is, but it could involve illegal campaign contributions and lying. And the fact is that I mean, for a U.S. prosecutor to invade the attorney, let alone the attorney for the president of the United States, they had to have a federal judge sign off on this, and they obviously did. This is big stuff. I mean, not only is Michael Cohen President Trump's attorney, but he's his fixer. He's been known to threaten people in the past, threaten them with huge lawsuits. I don't think anything that he does, the president doesn't know about. And that's why the president reacted so harshly. It's a witch hunt. The FBI broke into Cohen's office. It's a disgraceful situation. It's close. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what this has to do with Mueller's investigation. Mm-hmm. It may not have anything to do with Mueller's investigation. Yes, Mueller may have signed off on it, but I don't think. But I mean, this is the U.S. prosecutor's, U.S. attorney's office in New York and not Mueller's office. So when the president is talking about, well, maybe I'm going to get rid of Mueller. Maybe I'm going to get rid of Jeff Sessions. Maybe I'm going to get rid of Rod Rosenstein. You can get rid of everybody, but if nothing else, it just seems like it's getting closer to the president than Mr. Trump would like.
Is there anything the president can do at this point?
No, there isn't. I mean, obviously, to get a search warrant, you would need to get the okay from a federal judge. Mm-hmm. And obviously, a federal judge gave that okay for it to happen. So, you know, you can talk about attorney-client privilege all you want, but of course, if a crime has been committed, and why else would you get a search warrant unless you thought a crime was being committed? The president could, you know, bitch and moan and complain and talk about firing people, but he can't stop this, obviously. Well, the search of the of Cohen's offices and hotel room have already happened, but, I mean, the president is obviously not happy.
Is this unprecedented?
I can't think of any. I can't think of anything like that. I mean, you know, we've seen instances where the FBI and the Justice Department have raided. Like there was a case with Bill Jefferson, the former New Orleans congressman, apartment was or place of residence was raided by the FBI, and they found tens of thousands of dollars in the freezer. Remember that cold cash joke about Bill Jefferson years ago?
Yeah.
But I think it was overturned by the courts. This one, I just can't. And again, this is the president of the United States, an attorney, his personal attorney. And of course, the president of the United States' actions, including not only Stormy Daniels, but other actions regarding financial dealings with the Russians, with foreign governments. They're all under question, and this could prove to be very big, but who knows?
My sense is it isn't necessarily about Stormy Daniels, because Cohen's already said that he paid her that money, and they don't seem to be making a secret of it.
Well, yes, but I mean, there are a lot of questions about it. I mean, of course, first of all, the President of the United States said he knew nothing of it. And if the President of the United States said he knew nothing of this at all, then is there a non-disclosure agreement that Stormy Daniels needs to abide by? And if the President of the United States said he knew nothing about it, but he did know something about it, maybe there's perjury. Well, no, it's not even perjury because nobody was under oath or anything. It's just it's just more closing in on the president. It's just on just one more thing that the president would rather not focus on because obviously when we see look at the headlines, when we look at what's happening in Syria, in North Korea, with the Iran nuclear deal, with tariffs with China, things like that. Last is the last thing the president wanted to focus on.
He said, "We'll see," when asked whether he might fire Mueller in light of all of this.
Yeah, well, I mean, Mueller had nothing to do with it. You can say that, yes, Mueller signed off on it, but I mean, it's like saying, what Syria did is terrible. I'm going to fire Jeff Sessions. You need to focus on what you want. And of course, the president has been talking for the longest time about a way to get rid of Mueller, but I suspect the way to get rid of Mueller, first of all, that's the reason he's furious with Attorney General Jeff Sessions, because when he recused himself, that allowed the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein to appoint a special counsel, and that's Robert Mueller. So maybe they get rid of Sessions, they get rid of Rod Rosenstein, and he brings in somebody who could, you know, do the job of getting rid of Mueller. There are so many ifs there, but the fact is that it's an investigation that is far beyond, as you say, Stormy Daniels, far beyond Russia, and nobody knows how it's going to turn out.
The president, by the way, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, and you can also go to the All Sides Facebook page and post your question or comments there. President Trump sounded serious yesterday when he talked about getting to the bottom of the Syrian attacks, the gas attacks or whatever kind of chemical attacks they were, and responding to whoever is responsible. He said maybe by today, perhaps tomorrow, he'll announce his decision.
He's got to do something, and I'm not saying that because I just want something to happen, but he has threatened this in the past. Now, of course, the last time, last year,
yeah,
when
right.
there was a Syria a suspected chemical attack on civilians, the president launched some rockets into an airfield that Syrian Air Force uses. But the president went beyond Syria. He also talked about Iranian involvement and Russian involvement.
Right.
And he said, well, we'll see what kind of action there is. So, yes, we're talking about perhaps retaliatory airstrikes against Syria, but then he's also talking about, well, you know, something, what about Russia and what about Iran? And what makes this so ironic is that only about a week or so ago, the president was talking about getting out of Syria completely.
Exactly.
Let's get out right now. And then, of course, his military says, well, a military advisor say, well, you know, we are doing a good job in stopping ISIS in the eastern part of Syria. Let's just finish this job off. We don't have to be here for years like we are in Afghanistan, but maybe a couple of months. And the president reluctantly went along with that. But from somebody talking about, you know, getting out immediately to talking about retaliatory strikes against Syria, this just has the feeling that we're not leaving anytime soon.
I was listening to an interview with a journalist from Syria yesterday, and they were asked about the retaliatory strike last summer, I believe it was, in response to some alleged gas attacks. And anyways, the journalist said, well, big deal. It was just a one-off. It never accomplished anything. It didn't stop anything. What's the United States really going to do to stop what's going on in Syria?
Well, that's the question. And for the longest time, I remember that Donald Trump, and Donald Trump was not the only person, but to criticize former President Obama, who talked about if Syria crosses that red line with chemical weapons, something will happen. Well, Congress was very reluctant to make anything happen, and President Obama was reluctant to make anything happen. So ultimately, nothing happened. But for the president now, President Trump, to be talking about beyond Syria and talking about, you know, being tough with Russia, Well, what is he going to do? Is he, I mean, maybe they increase sanctions. Maybe they, I just feel like for the president who likes to talk tough and has, one of the reasons he got elected is because the American people felt he was tough and is tough. He can't just let these words go out there and nothing happen. So something is going to happen. I assume it's a retaliatory strike in Syria, but I just wonder if it's more than that. Of course, every time he gets angry at Iran, he talks about, ripping up the nuclear agreement. And again, when you talk about ripping up the nuclear agreement, then what confidence does North Korea have with Washington when they're trying to talk about working out some kind of a deal, when the president could just, abrogate a treaty, because he decides to. So there are a lot of things that are connected here and much more complicated. And right now the options aren't that easy for him.
Phil in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Phil.
Hello.
Hey.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm just curious as to what Ken thinks the reaction of Congress might be if Trump should decide to fire Robert Mueller.
Well, something that's interesting. I mean, that's a good question, Phil. And, of course, Mitch McConnell and other Republicans have been asked that over and over, and they say, well, we don't feel it's time. Like, there are some Republicans, including many Democrats as well, who have said that maybe we should pass something that will either have safeguards against the firing of Robert Mueller. And Mitch McConnell and others have said, and Paul Ryan have said, well, it's premature. We don't have to worry about that. But Lindsey Graham says that, it could unravel the presidency. A firing of Robert Mueller could unravel the presidency. Of course, so many times there are references to the famous Saturday Night Massacre of October of 1973, when Nixon fired Elliot Richardson, the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, William Ruckelshaus, because they wouldn't fire Archibald Cox, the Watergate prosecutor. He finally got the Solicitor General, Robert Bork, to fire him. But I mean, that people are reminded of that kind of thing. So the president has shown no hesitance to get rid of people in his administration. We've seen only in the last couple of weeks, H.R. McMaster and Rex Tillerson and others, David Shulkin, the Veterans Affairs Secretary. I mean, he has no hesitation about getting rid of people, but he has to know that this would... Well, here's the question. I mean, if he does fire Mueller, is Lindsey Graham correct and say this will unravel the presidency? Or will his supporters and most Republicans in Congress say, who cares? I mean, there seems to be no indication that Republicans are itching for a fight with the president. And it seems like on anything, any kind of controversy that comes up, there are fewer and fewer Republicans who are standing up and say this is wrong. Look at Scott Pruitt, the embattled EPA administrator, with all the seemingly ethics violations and conflicts and that's going on. Very few Republicans are saying, "Well, this guy is kind of breaking the law." They just seem to be very reticent about taking on the president.
Unless they're among those that are retiring, and there have been stories now about that, how that's like, they're calling it, the retirement caucus? Or?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, you think of Jeff Flake of Arizona, very courageous against Trump because he's leaving. Mm-hmm. The Senator, Bob Corker, the senator from Tennessee, Charlie Dent, the Republican congressman from Pennsylvania, very critical of the president. But of course, they're not seeking re-election. Matter of fact, they're retiring in 2018. So I guess you do have a sense of a little more profiles and courage when you don't have to face the voters, because Republicans who have to face the voters, and we saw this with Jeff Flake when he wrote a book critical of Trump, the Republican Party went ballistic on Flake and his numbers plummeted. So I think Republicans have gotten the message, or at least many Republicans have gotten the message, that you take on the president at your own political peril, because there are a lot of Republicans who are pro-Trump Republicans who will stick to the president no matter what, and they'll pay out in a retribution with a primary challenge.
Thanks, Phil, for that call. We are talking today with Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking politics this hour with political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, Ken Rudin. Questions or comments, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check our Facebook page out and post a question or comment there. Ken, I wanted to drill a little bit more down into the Scott Pruitt issue, administrator of the United States Environmental Protection Agency. You're saying that in another day and age, Congress would be upset by this, and they're just looking the other way at this point. What's the most egregious thing he's done, in your opinion?
Do we have the full hour or the two-hour show?
No, obviously.
Well, I mean, first of all,
that's why I didn't say for you to list them all.
Well, no, look, there is seriously, there is, I mean, just yesterday, the head of the Office of Government Ethics said this guy, Scott Pruitt, needs to be looked at. Now, there are ideological reasons why a lot of people don't like Scott Pruitt, mostly from the environmental community, that basically a lot of the regulations that President Obama put through to protect the water and air and emissions, things like that, are being reversed by the Trump administration. Although President Trump promised that. That's not a violation of what he promised, so that's not the argument. But there are seemingly petty things, but when you add them all up, it just seems to be a pattern. For example, he got a below-value rental of a condominium in Washington, Scott Pruitt. He rented it from an energy lobbyist, the wife of an energy lobbyist, whose firm has business with the EPA. Now, if that's not a conflict of interest or an ethics problem, I mean, I don't know what is. He has taken many personal flights on the government dime that will send him back to his home state of Oklahoma. Scott Pruitt is the former attorney general of Oklahoma. He's talked about running for the Senate in 2020 when Jim Inhofe may retire. And actually, there was a New York Times article, and this blew my mind, talking about Scott Pruitt thinking of running for president in 2024.
Oh, I did not see that.
The fact that we're talking about 2024.
Are you sure you were reading The Onion?
That's a great. It felt like The Onion. I mean, this guy is really talking about, you know, but he is. And yet the thing is, and he's also demoted or fired staffers who have questioned his motives and his conduct and things like that. So there are, you know, the president likes him, that he feels he's an ideological spirit. But, you know, whenever the president says, I think he's doing a great job, you know, Scott Pruitt is not long for the world. I still think that as much as Trump likes him, and he does, and the fact that they have a camaraderie regarding ideology and things like that and policy, I can't see him lasting much longer, because the last thing Trump wants are distractions. Now, a lot of people say that Trump does distractions to distract from other things that's getting him in trouble. But he doesn't want things out of his control. And right now, the focus on Scott Pruitt's travel deals, his spending practices, the condominium he rented from an energy lobbyist, that's not the headlines Donald Trump wants. And I suspect that Pruitt is not long for this world, but I could be surprised, because I have been surprised for the past 14 months.
Someone asked me, you know, why would Scott Pruitt need all that security detail? And I would imagine, given his stand and the steps that he already has taken at the EPA, he probably gets a fair amount of hate mail.
Well, everybody does. I mean, look, I know that, I mean, everybody in every walk of life, conservative or liberal, they get threats from the other side. But I think that Pruitt has gone to an extreme here. He's getting these bulletproof vehicles. He has a private phone booth in his office, so nobody can listen to his phone calls.
I mean, that's really weird.
It's Nixonian almost. But the fact is that again, it's in an administration where there are a lot of controversies, and we see it with Ben Carson and Betsy DeVos and others. Scott Pruitt seems to top that list.
Oh,
and
boy.
Plus the fact, the last thing Congress wants to do and let Republicans want to do is have a confirmation battle, especially as the 2018 midterm elections are getting underway, about who the next EPA administrator would be, given all the controversies that are going on with air and water quality and climate change and things like that. So, plus the fact that we still have to confirm the new Secretary of State, Mark Pompeo. We have to have the new CIA director.
Gina Haspel.
Jeannie Ryder, who has a lot of questions about her authorization and administering of so-called interrogation techniques during the Bush administration, a new Veterans Affairs Secretary. Now you don't have to confirm John Bolton because the National Security Advisor is not needed to be confirmed by the Senate. But it is interesting that when Donald Trump talked about how much he hated the war in Iraq and was opposed to it from the beginning, and it was all Bush's fault, it was George W.'s fault, George H.W.'s fault, Jeb's fault, blaming the entire Bush family, here he picks the National Security Advisor, John Bolton, who remains to this day a proud supporter of that Iraqi war. So it's kind of fun.
Jeff in Westerville, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Ann. I've got a couple of things real quick. I've got kind of a wider statement than a directed question. A year and a half ago, there were people in this country that were saying that they'd leave the country if Donald Trump was elected. And now a year and a half into it, yeah, there's still outcry, but not nearly to the point that we saw then. Is this becoming the new norm? Because if so, it's alarming. This is not anything close to what we've traditionally seen from the presidency. And it doesn't seem like he backed down nearly to the point that we were expecting when he took office. And my other question is, does there seem to be anybody in a place in the Democratic Party to challenge him in 2020? I'll hang up and listen to your response.
All right, Jeff,
thanks. Oh, my goodness. These are great questions.
New norm.
I mean, first of all, there was a great column in the New York Times today by David Brooks, who talks about all these never-Trump Republicans, and he's one of them, who have been warning the country during the election, during the transition period, since then, about Trump's excesses and his love of authoritarian and anti-democratic things, like his aversion to a free press. He's talking about how the media is the enemy of the American people. Whether it's the new normal, you wonder about that, because there are some things like Scott Pruitt. Like, the fact is that when we're watching 60 Minutes and we see a porn star talk about her relationship with the president, and everybody says, "I didn't learn anything new." I mean, that is just so remarkable that they didn't learn anything new, and it just... Look, Donald Trump said famously in 2015 that he can go in the middle of Fifth Avenue in New York City and shoot someone and he would not lose support. He doesn't have a majority of the American people, clearly. He only has about 40% in approval ratings. But those 40% will back him through and through. And whenever you say something about the accusations and the things suggested that Trump may have done, the response is always, "Well, what about Obama? What about Hillary? What about James Garfield?" I mean, they'll always point to something else, somebody else, and not the person who's in the White House.
What about a 2020 challenge or any sense at this point? I haven't. I feel like
Jeff was asking about the Democratic side. Mm-hmm. I mean, the typical names are people you just wonder if they could do it. I question that. I mean, you hear about Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, Kirsten Gillibrand from New York, Kamala Harris of California, Elizabeth Warren, maybe Bernie Sanders is talking about it. I don't know. I mean, yes, they'll win. They'll carry California. Yes, they'll carry New York and Harvard. I just don't know. Just like the challenges to Nancy Pelosi. Mm-hmm. I think if you want to expand the Democratic brand in this country, I don't know if you do it from the left. I don't know what the answer is, because certainly you could make the case that as much as Donald Trump won, you could say to make the case that Hillary Clinton lost, because Hillary Clinton's numbers were not good as well. You need somebody who I mean, basically, you can't just say that I want to see Donald Trump impeached and that's what's going to get you elected in 2020. That would be a fatal mistake for the Democrats. They have to offer something new. And, you know, it was interesting. I was noticing that Sherrod Brown, who's, you know, obviously running for a third term reelection to the Senate this year. And he talked about how much he likes Donald Trump's tariff policy, that he likes the tariffs on steel and aluminum, and he likes the attacks on NAFTA.
Right.
So
nothing new
I think there were Democrats, and then also then we saw Connor Lamb, the Democrat who won the congressional seat in Southwest Pennsylvania. He says, "Look, we should get rid of Nancy Pelosi. You know, I think guns are, you know, guns are great." I mean, he didn't say it that way, of course, but I think you Democrats need to pick and choose what they feel they can run on and what could win, because it's one size does not fit all. You know, it's one thing to be a liberal about guns in Minnesota or New York, not even Minnesota, but New York, California, or inner cities, and another to be in West Virginia or North Dakota or, you know, Montana, where there are key Senate races. Are the Democrats, they're going to run as anti-gun Democrats? No, they can't. So it's very complicated. And if you asked me, do I think that Donald Trump will get reelected in 2020? He could. He could very well get reelected. I mean, I'm not predicting it now, but to say that he's so unpopular that the country is going to rebel against him, I'm not convinced of it.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Questions or comments from my guest, Ken Rudin, 614-292-8513. And Marie in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Marie.
Hi. Give me a minute to set this up, because my question comes from fear. But what I've seen with the current president is that he does create distractions to get the attention away from something he's doing that is questionable on a personal level. But he creates these big political things. I've seen that happen consistently. But the thing that really has me terrified is the appointment of Bolton. And it, you know, with the president's history of creating these diversions, my fear is that he's going to create a war situation that Bolton is going to go full speed ahead with. What can the Congress do? I mean, legally, what could the Congress do, whether they would or not? Legally, what can they do to slow him down on that?
Well, legally, I mean, that's a great question, but I mean, legally, you know, we're not supposed to commit troops to anywhere without a declaration of war. Of course, the last time Congress declared war was 1941 or 42 against Romania. I mean, I think that was the last time Congress ever did. I mean, Vietnam, Korea, both Persian Gulf Wars. I mean, Congress did say that we will support the president, but there was no declaration of war. But it's a great question about Bolton, because Bolton, I mean, again, for Donald Trump to say that, you know, I fought the Iraqi war and I want an American first policy and I don't want these incursions in other countries. John Bolton has said that he welcomes, you know, I don't know if he said it, he welcomes it, but he said things that, well, we should have a preemptive strike on Iran. We should have war with North Korea. I mean, he's a true hawk, he's a true neocon, but ostensibly that's what Donald Trump was always campaigning against. But the combination of somebody who has an itchy trigger finger like John Bolton, and I don't even know if diversion is a fair word for Donald Trump. I don't think he's doing things to take your mind off it. I think Donald Trump just has this short attention span that he said, well, oh, here's a nice shiny object that I want to focus on, or here's another one. I don't think he's doing it deliberately to make us not think about Stormy Daniels or Robert Mueller or something like that. I think he just does what excites him. I mean, he's his own Secretary of State. He's his own Environmental Protection Agency administrator. He's his own FBI director. But the combination, and this is what I think Marie asked a very good point, the combination of Trump, who can be so impulsive and mercurial, and John Bolton, who is an ideologue who has never seen a war he doesn't like, that seems to be a dangerous combination. Boy, did I make Marie feel any better for that answer?
Marie, thanks for that call. Bob in Marysville, you're on the air. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Hey, what does your guest think about the odds of Governor Kasich running for president? And secondly, if he does run, what is his chances of winning? I got him on a scale of 0 to 10. I got him about a -2.
Okay.
I think that's pretty good. Those are pretty good odds. I mean, you know, John Kasich has told himself that he finished second to Donald Trump in 2016. And there's truth to that because everybody had dropped out and John Kasich was the last person standing. But the fact is, the only primary he carried was Ohio. And right now, you know, it's very funny. John Kasich is very interesting, and you and I talked about him last week, that he's going to New Hampshire, and he's talking about, you know, all these feel-good things that I never thought of John Kasich as a feel-good guy.
Wait, don't tell me this week.
Right, and he was also on Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. Let's not forget that.
But he has never been on my show, just saying
I never heard of that Wait show, and I'm vaguely familiar with All Sides. But he was on Ken Rudin's show. But anyway, he's soft and funny, and he's you know, lighthearted. I think he is looking at 2020. I don't see him. I don't know who could beat him, beat the president. Perhaps nobody. I think those who will vote in a Republican primary will stay with the president. But so far it has not deterred Kasich. He is everywhere. What was that old joke that he'll even go to the opening of an envelope? I mean, he'll be everywhere to be seen.
Well, but the polls have the latest polls that we've seen show that yes, he did win the primary in Ohio back in 2016, but he could not win a primary against Trump today.
Well, I think that's true, but let's be honest with you. The day of the election, I didn't think that Donald Trump could beat Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. So if I couldn't predict the day of the election, God knows we are not going to predict 2020 right now. But if I were a betting person, then I'm really not a betting person. But if I were, I would say that John Kasich may not be the guy who can stop Donald Trump for the Republican nomination.
Thank you, Bob, in Marysville, for that call. We would welcome other calls, 614-292-8513, or you could email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page. Post your question or comment there. My guest is Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking politics this hour with veteran political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, Ken Rudin. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Carl. We might as well kick off with that. He asks, do you think Trump will keep Pence as vice president in 2020?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Pence, first of all, I think Pence was actually a very good choice for the president, because for all the conservatives who didn't feel that Donald Trump was one of them, certainly Mike Pence is one of them. He's a true committed conservative, and he's done nothing to alienate the president at all, unlike Jeff Sessions, which is interesting. Jeff Sessions, the first senator to back his candidacy, but the president has been railing about Sessions from day one. Pence is kind of quiet. He goes to the funerals. He goes to the fundraisers like many vice presidents in the old days, you know, the out of sight, out of mind vice presidents. Mm-hmm. But he's not controversial. I mean, you know, other than people who might find him too ideologically pure. But he's doing what I think Donald Trump wants him to do.
So that's a big YES from Ken Rudin.
Yeah, I mean, you think of in history, I mean, Gerald Ford got rid of Nelson Rockefeller, although it wasn't an elected ticket in 1975 because the conservatives objected to him. Franklin Roosevelt got rid of Henry Wallace in 1940 and wound up with a running mate by the name of Harry Truman, and that turned to be very consequential. But for the most part, for all the talk like, you know, will JFK dump Lyndon Johnson, will Nixon dump Agnew, we always talk about that, but Pence is far less controversial and far less of a political liability than the previous VPs I've mentioned.
Meredith in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Meredith.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about this whole investigation with Russia. It kind of seems like there hasn't really been anything proclaimed about that, but it's certainly still concerning that the president and much of his cabinet would be mixed up in something like that. Do you think that that might have an impact on his future as being president of the United States?
Wait, does it have an impact on what?
On his future as president of the United States.
Oh, that's the real question. I mean, Democrats, to their discredit, I think, have been talking too much about impeachment because, as you know, in the history of this country, the number of presidents who have been impeached and removed from office is zero. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to happen. It's certainly not going to happen with the Republican Congress. But the fact is, there are a lot of questions. I mean, it's not only it's Jared Kushner's under investigation. Paul Manafort, his former campaign chairman, has been indicted. The former national security advisor pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. So Mueller is getting close. I don't know what he's getting. And there have been indictments of Russians for their involvement and their interference in 2016. What Trump knows is not clear. Nothing's been proven. I think we just have to wait and see. I think, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people who feel that just Mueller is going to have some innocuous statement at the end and nothing changes. But, you know, you never know. I mean, look, Watergate from the break-in of June of 72 to the resignation in August of 74 was 2 years. So we've only been talking about a year so far of Robert Mueller. We'll just see where he goes. And as long as he's not fired, well, you know, he'll just keep continuing on. We talked about that early phone call who talked about the distractions. Robert Mueller is not fooled or distracted by any distractions.
A follow-up email from Joseph. He says, I keep hearing pundits say that it's unclear whether a sitting president could be an indicted, but why not? It's true that Nixon was named an unindicted co-conspirator, but didn't Watergate also establish that no one is above the law?
Well, both comments are true. He was an unindicted co-conspirator, and the president is not above the law. I don't know. I've seen both sides argued. I don't know why, if a crime has been committed, how you could say that the president is not indictable. Again, I'm not saying that President Trump has committed any crimes. I'm just saying legally, hypothetically, I don't know how you can say that the president can't be indicted if he or she did something criminal. So count me as somebody who says that, yes, he can be indicted.
So the special counsel, Robert Mueller, he's told Trump's attorneys back in March that he doesn't consider the president a criminal target at this point, but he's continuing this investigation. He wants to interview Trump. He also told Trump's lawyers that he's preparing a report about the president's actions while in office and potential obstruction of justice. So the president remains a focus point, but he's saying it's not criminal.
Well, yes, I mean, that is what he's saying. Of course, you wonder if maybe Robert Mueller is doing that as a decoy to say that you have no fear. There's no reason to fear you sitting down with me because you're not the target of an investigation. And the fact that the president keeps saying that I want to talk to Mueller because, you know, I want to, you know, to show that I have nothing to hide, to quote a former president as well. But Trump's lawyers, or at least the lawyers that are remaining, say that that would be a disastrous mistake, that Donald Trump has this tendency to blurt things out. I mean, I remember this interview he had with Lester Holt. Mm-hmm. Basically, he said that he got rid of FBI Director James Comey because to stop the investigation. So, you know, if I were Donald Trump's lawyer, and I'm glad I'm not, and I don't even play one on the radio, I would suggest that he does not sit down with the president, with Robert Mueller and talk, and certainly not under oath. But, you know, you never know what Trump is going to do. And Robert Mueller is, you know, just, I mean, I still think he's just baiting a trap that I don't know how the president could win should he sit down with Robert Mueller.
We talked earlier about the president's penchant for distraction, and I wanted to bring up a few of those. The Justice Department has introduced production quotas for immigration judges. They want to kick it up a notch in terms of the number of cases that are resolved in a year. The standards they will include standards from the department's Executive Office for Immigration Review. And I'm just wondering what you make of that.
It's part of what the president has been doing about immigration from the moment he announced his candidacy, when he went down that famous escalator at Trump Towers and talked about how the Mexicans were sending over drug dealers and rapists. And it's a combination of things. I think one of the reasons that the Trump administration is trying to force a question about citizenship on the census, one of the reasons that the president is talking about sending National Guard troops to the Mexican border. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of things. One, the president is very frustrated that Congress has not authorized the $25 billion for the wall. Of course, you know that famous wall that Mexico was paying for? Well, guess what? Mexico is not paying for it, and he wants Congress to pay for it, and Congress doesn't want to pay for it either. He's frustrated about that, and he's also frustrated. He was talking about that caravan of immigrants that's starting in Honduras, working its way up through Mexico, and obviously going to attack the border in the United States. And I say obviously, according to what Trump believes. And then he would say that, and the reason Democrats like that is because they love illegal votes, and the illegal votes these people would bring, and which goes back to Trump's obsession with the fact that he lost the popular vote to Hillary Clinton by, you know, like 3 million votes. And it just so happens that most of that margin came in California. And so that's why the president says, well, those are all these illegal votes being cast in California. He can't get past that. And so immigration is something that's stuck in his craw. And so it's a combination of the attorneys in the Justice Department on immigration, the National Guardsmen in the Mexican border, the wall, the fake voting, Fairness Integrity Commission. It's an obsession he has, and the base goes along with it. I mean, look, nobody wants this country to be flooded in with people coming here illegally, and Donald Trump has played on that to his advantage and to his supporters' advantage.
What about the 17 states in the District of Columbia and 6 cities as well that have filed a lawsuit against the government, you mentioned, for the addition of a citizenship question to the 2020 census, claiming that that's unconstitutional. What does this mean?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, because I thought I read somewhere a while ago that there was a deadline for the census questions to be. I think it was early April, I'm not sure.
It's a done deal.
What I think. And what's interesting about this is that in the past, whenever a new question was added to the census, it went through weeks, if not months, of review and debate and conversation. This seemed to be a spur of the moment. I think, boom, let's put this on. And it left the opponents to that blindsided. So, yes, you're right. New York, California, 17 states or so, 18 states have filed a lawsuit, you know, saying that this is would lead to discrimination. But I don't know where it goes. I don't know if it's too late. I don't know. I don't know if anything could be done to stop that.
President Trump has threatened to impose new tariffs on an additional $100 billion in Chinese imports on top of the $50 billion in tariffs on U.S. Imports of Chinese products like motor vehicles and home appliances. And we've talked about that. Now he's telling farmers that he'll protect them in a trade war. He told them yesterday, quote, "We'll make it up to them. In the end, they're going to be much stronger than they are right now." This is an issue. We've talked about it pretty extensively here in Ohio, where, you know, the number one export is soybeans. They're kind of, it's right before, it's a late planting season this year because of rain. They're all kind of sitting, they're on tenterhooks right now.
They are, and rightfully so. I don't know how you're going to make up for it. See, here's the thing, though. The president has, from the beginning, always felt that the United States was taken advantage of by unfair trade practices from other countries, notably China. And there's something to be said about that. China does not have what we could say fair trade practices. But the talk about instituting tariffs, and first it was $50 billion, and then China would say, okay, we'll respond. So when China responds with tariffs on soybeans and pork and corn, the stock market isn't happy with it. Farmers are not happy with it. Manufacturing is not happy with it. And so the president doesn't like to be taken advantage of it, and he feels that he can bully the Chinese, but the Chinese feel they can bully right back. See, I don't know how it ends up, because I kind of think that the U.S. is a bigger market for Chinese goods than the U.S. is for Chinese goods. So I think China needs American, if they want to be a continuing superpower, they mm-hmm. need U.S. markets. I think both sides can be hurt, but clearly I don't see a way out. I don't see how the farmers could be. So you could say, well, you know, I'm gonna do a special deal for the farmers to protect you, because
yeah.
any kind of tariff like that, you know, will hurt the Midwest, will hurt the farmers, hurt manufacturing. And it's interesting, because when this first started, when it was talking about steel and aluminum, Sherrod Brown was one of those senators who said, this is great, this right. is great, you know, it'll help steel mills, it'll help steel jobs. And in some ways it can, and it has. But of course, when you accelerate the threats and accelerate the back and forth, everybody seems to get hurt.
Sheila in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, how are you guys?
Fine, thanks.
My question is about just the general ethics problems that we seem to be repeating over and over. I mean, it used to be that the presidency wasn't an entry-level position, so we didn't have to really spell out any kind of ethics rules, because that person had already had a government job or a military job or something. Do you think we're going to have to like go through and codify things for the president that we haven't had to do before?
Well, I think the rules are there. I mean, the fact is that the president almost seems to be getting rich. His job is helping him get rich and expand Trump Industries. And the fact that, you know, he's doubled the initiation fees for his Mar-a-Lago country club. And the fact that so many business deals are taking place at Trump-owned properties. I think the rules are there. The fact that Jared Kushner is now the de facto Secretary of State, although he did lose any kind of clearance.
Yeah, he just minus the clearance.
But I mean, I think Sheila's question is fair, that it's astounding to me the kind of ethical lapses I see in this administration. I mean, talking about draining the swamp, this sounds very swampish to me. And yet, you know, I mean, the media is doing a good job of talking about it and warning and pointing these things out. But do you see Congress standing up and saying something is wrong here and something needs to be changed or codified or revised? I don't see that. But I've never seen anything like this. I just really, you know, you talk about Nixon scandals and Clinton scandals and whatever scandals you want to talk about. But this just seems to be. This is the way Donald Trump has always been. He's been a businessman. He's been his own boss. He's never had to answer to anybody else. And I think that a lifetime of behavior is not too dissimilar to what we're seeing at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Thanks, Sheila, for that call. We only have about a minute left, and I wanted to ask you if anything. I won't talk to you again until May. Anything we should be looking for in the primaries out there?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, you know what's interesting? I mean, you're seeing that in Ohio, too, with the gubernatorial primary. But mm-hmm. what's fascinating to me is that while so many people are talking about how, you know, Donald Trump may be hurting the Republican Party in many Republican primaries, the question is, and we've seen this now in Indiana, which also has a May primary, who is more pro-Trump? Who is more loyal to President Trump? So somehow Mike DeWine is seen as a liberal because he's not as you know, strong on Trump as he should be, according to Mary Taylor.
Which ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. So I'm seeing this in a lot of cases where the issue, the loyalty to Donald Trump is becoming paramount in many Republican primaries.
We'll look for that, and we look forward to talking to you next month, Ken Rudin. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ann Fisher.
Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. That's it for now. Thank you so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.